Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Pei Gimel Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Ba'arba'a perakim b'shana, amocher behemat chaveiro." 4 times a year, when a person sells an animal to his tzumer, tzarich lehodio, ima macharti lishchot, bita macharti lishchot. If he had sold either one of the mother or her offspring on that same day, he has to let the second party know that he sold it to someone else on that day. Ve'eluhein, and these are those time periods. Erev Yom Tov Acharon Shel Achag, Erev Shmini Atzeret, Ve'erev Yom Tov Arishon Shel Pesach, Erev Pesach, Ve'erev Atzeret, Erev Shavuot, Ve'erev Rosh Hashanah. And also on Erev Rosh Hashanah, what's interesting and stands out is the fact that Erev Sukkot is not mentioned in this list. You would have expected it to be on this list. Rashi explains over here with regards to the fact that they have an Erev Yom Tov Acharon, Erev Shmini Atzeret, is because people made a big deal out of that. Derech Yisrael asot sudot, stam lokeach ve'imayin lokeach el l'shochta miyad. People in these periods of time make big sudot. If they're buying an animal, they're buying it to shecht it. And then with regards to Yom Tov Acharon, are you marbim v'simcha? People used to make it an especially joyous time. B'nei sheregel le'atzmohu, it's its own regel, v'chaviv alehen. And it was particularly beloved. That has to do with both the symbiotic relationship there, where Hashem says, stay one more day with me in Shmini Atzeret, the day that indicates Hashem's tremendous love and particular fondness for Bnei Yisrael. And we respond in kind by treating it as a very special day. And that's why they used to shech to have big su'udot on it. It's also the last chag before the big break over the winter. The people also put a premium on it. In addition to the fact that, for the same reason, why maybe they didn't do an Erev Yom Tov Arishon, might not apply to Erev Yom Tov Acharon, that the Balei HaTosafot bring from the Rabbeinu Tam, that the reason that they didn't have Shechting or big Su'udot from Erev Yom Tov Arishon is, Omer Rabbeinu Tam Mishum Dekulei Alma Tridei B'Sukkah Ubululav. Everybody's asuk in the mitzvot of Sukkot. The Sukkah, the Lulav, all the preparations for Sukkot. Therefore, people don't have so much free time, in that you have a limited amount of time between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. In that limited span of time, you have to do mitzvah, build the sukkah, get the arba minim, put everything together. And I would say, on top of that, you have the issue, which is that you're not living in the house. You're going to be living in the sukkah, which also might present a certain amount of reason that people might have not either expended a lot of money or been able to be engaged in shechita because of the living out in the sukkah itself. Obviously, Aliyah the Regel is impactful, although we see by Erev Pesach that they do shech the animals, even though they're going to be up in Yerushalayim. So that's the reason by Erev Sukkot, and then might also be the reason by Erev Yom Tov Acharon, by Erev Shmini Atzeret, that they increased the suda, because they were moving back into the house. So in addition to the reasons that we gave in terms of Shmini Atzeret being a unique day, it might also be following up on Sukkot, where you're moving back into the house from the Sukkah, which also might facilitate the ability to have a greater Se'uda. So those are the 4 times a year where you would have to notify the other individual that you've sold either party. I mean, you've sold either the mother or an offspring because of the risks, or the high risk, that there'd be a problem with Lotov Be'Pino, which you can't shecht on one day. And if you know the other party's going to shecht, then you got to check before you can do any shechita. The implications of this to the remainder of the year are interesting. From here, it sounds like it's only these 4 prakim where you'd have to notify. If it was the rest of the year, you wouldn't have to notify the individuals. Divrei Rabbi Yossi HaGalili, and according to Rabbi Yossi HaGalili, af erev yom kippurim begalil. Even on Yom Kippur in the Galil, where they used to make a big su'uda on erev yom kippurim, that's based on the drasha, when it says mitshi from the 9th, that Yom Kippur begins on the 9th. From there we learn that kol ochel b'shote b'erev yom kippurim maleh anai alav kilo hitaneh, as if they had fasted. So over there, there's an assay to eat on erev yom kippurim. And in the Galil, they were especially careful about that mitzvah. Now, why in the Galil and nowhere else, if this is a generic mitzvah that applies to everyone? So the Balei HaTosafot mentioned the Gemara and Ketubot, say that everywhere else, on Erev Yom Kippurim, they'd only eat basar of and dagim. They used to eat chicken and fish. But it happened to be in the Galil that they ate behemot. They made it into a much bigger su'uda. And that's what was unique about the Galil. Others like the Meiri suggest that the memra of Kol Ochel Be'erev Yom HaKippurim is actually authored by Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who was in the Galil, they were nohag, especially, or put a lot of effort into doing it on Erev Yom HaKippurim like Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And for that reason, they were shechting behemoth, not just chicken and fish, because the Gemara Ketubot has a chashash with regards to Yom Kippur, possibly following that on Monday, that people might be shochet ben of in order to eat on Erev Yom HaKippurim and then worry about Shabbat. So over there, Baal HaTosfot asked the question, that's what they're quoting over here, why ben of? What about animals? What about everything else? From there, they note that they practice, or the common practice was to eat chicken or fish on Erev Yom HaKippurim. And the people of the Galil had a unique side to this, where they used to eat behemoth, they used to make a bigger suda on Erev Yom HaKippurim. And that's why they're mentioned in particular over here, because of that practice. Am Rabbi Yehuda, Eimatai, Bizman She'ein Lo Revach. That's in a case where there's no room. Ala Yesh Lo Revach, if there is room, Ein Tzarich Lo Dio. You don't have to let him know. Tosafot notes it with regards to the Gemara later on, that whenever Rabbi Yehuda says, Eimatai, Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us, says, that is Lufaresh. He's not coming to argue on the previous stand in the Mishnah, but rather to explain the previous stand in the Mishnah. So through this, the Rishonim come up with different ways to explain Rabbi Yehuda over here, and is qualifying of the statements that were before. Rashi claims that the qualifying statement is that that's only true if you sell it on Erev Yom Tov itself. But if you sell it any time before Erev Yom Tov, then you don't have to worry about it, because then the person has options to shecht it. So when you sold it 2-3 days before Yom Tov, he can shecht it on the day he purchased it, he can shecht it the day after, the day after. There's a window of time. So when you sell the other animal with the offspring of the mother on Erev Yom Tov or past that time, you started to open up the spekot that it's going to happen on the same day, or reduce the risk that it's going to happen on the same day. The Meiri in particular focuses on this idea that when people purchase an animal for food or for basar, they shecht it on the day that they buy it. So that you can have somewhat of an assumption or a higher probability that they will shecht on the day they purchased it. That even more reduces the probability that you're going to end up with them shechting on the same day. That's the way Rashi views it. It has to do with the number of days beforehand. The Ramban, interestingly enough, based on the Tosefta, suggests over here that this is modifying before where it says Yom HaKippurim. He says that this only refers to Yom Kippur and none of the other days. And that is because Bizman She'esh Lo Revach, when the opportunity to shecht it on a number of days, that means that you could have shechted it on Erev Yom Tov. But remember, in their day, when they wanted fresh meat on Yom Tov, they shecht it on Yom Tov itself. So if you purchase it and prize it on Erev Yom Tov, he can use it or shecht it that day, or he can shecht it the next day on Yom Tov, or even the next day afterwards. All of those are plausible opportunities for him to use the behemah, and therefore you don't have to worry about it. So over here, the Ramban is somewhat suggesting there, Yehuda is arguing on the statement of the Tanakhama, because he's saying, it's really only true by Yom Kippur, because by Erev Yom Kippurim, you only have one choice. Erev Yom Kippur. Can't shecht it on Yom Kippur, and after Yom Kippur, it's not meaningful. By the other days, especially if you're on Erev Yom Tov HaRishon Shel Sukkot, or you're on Erev Yom Tov HaRishon Shel Pesach, the days afterwards are also days that are significant. So there is a window in time in which the person would possibly shecht it. And for that reason, only by Yom Kippur does Rabbi Yehuda consider it to be an issue. That's the way that the Ramban explains it. The Rambam, on the other hand, explains it as being a modification or qualification of Erev Yom Tov itself. When did you sell it to him on Erev Yom Tov? If you sold it to him on Erev Yom Tov right before Hashecha, then you can't then sell the other animal, the mother or the child then, because you know that the person is going to shecht it really in that moment. If you sold it to him with Revach, with earlier in the day, then you have no idea what they're going to do with it. I mean, if they're buying it right before Yom Tov, right before Hashecha, they're searching around looking for an animal that they need basar before Yom Tov, in all likelihood they're going to shecht it today because they wanted it for Yom Tov. When they bought it earlier in the day, doesn't mean they're going to use it for Erev Yom Tov. They may save it for Chol HaMoed, they may keep it. It's not as obvious that they're going to use it right away. And therefore he sees in that a window. But according to the Rambam, Rambam takes the Eimatai the most seriously in terms of being a qualifier of the Tanakhama statement, because then Rabbi Yehuda is specifically addressing the Erev Yom Tov of the Tanakhama. He's saying which part of that Erev Yom Tov is or isn't considered to be problematic. That's the way that the Rambam learns it. Modeh Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda agrees, and this is where Tosafot makes his comment, what do you mean Modeh Rabbi Yehuda? Moder Rabbi Yehuda makes it sound like Rabbi Yehuda was arguing, and now he's modeh. If Eimatai means he's qualifying the Tanakhama and not arguing, then what is umodeh over here? That's what drives some of the tension in the views of these Rishonim, as to whether Eimatai over here really means a qualifier like normal, or over here maybe he's arguing because you have umodeh Rabbi Yehuda right afterwards. When you sell the mother to the chatan, the groom, and you sell the daughter to the kala, shetzarich lo dio, there you have to notify them. Doesn't matter how early they buy it, or whether they buy it, according to the Rambam, early on Erev the Chatuna, doesn't matter anymore, because this is the Chatan and Kala who are going to be attending the same wedding. They're going to be at the same wedding, they have the same Se'uda, so that means that they're both going to shecht it on the same day. You can't make any assumptions now of Spekot, or maybe, or possibly. You know exactly why they're buying it, and they're buying it for the exact same occasion. If that's the case, there's a very high likelihood that they're going to shecht on the same day, and you have to notify them because of that. During these four period of times, you can force the butcher to shecht animals to provide you with meat. Even if you have a very large animal that's worth 1,000 dinar, and some small buyer comes in and says, I need a dinar worth of meat, we can compel the butcher to do shechita, and he has to provide the meat to this individual, even though he has no buyers for the remainder of the meat. That's the takanat chachamim, that the butchers are on the hook to provide meat to the people who need it on Erev Yom Tov, despite the fact that he may not have an ability to sell the remainder of it, because that is the proviso of being certified as a butcher, is that you have to provide in these periods of time for people who need basar. Fikach. Therefore, for whatever reason, it dies and they can't do shechita on it, the lokeach actually lost his money. He's going to get a dinar's worth of basar from the nevela. Aval, bashar yimot hashana, in the remainder of the year, ain't okay. It is not that way. You can't compel the butcher to chef to provide you meat if he can't sell the remainder of the meat. He has to have a business, and therefore he has to have buyers for the meat. You can't compel him to chef it. Fikach imeit, meit lemocher. Therefore, if it dies in the possession of the mocher. Again, we'll give more details of that in the Gemara. Right, Tana. Im lo hodio, holeich vishochet veinu nimna. If he doesn't notify him, then you go ahead and shecht it without any consideration. That's the diuk out of what was said in the Mishnah. The Mishnah seems to indicate that those four times a year, maybe some other exceptional times when you might have to give notice, but otherwise you don't have to give notice. If the seller does not give you notice, what does that mean? Is that information that then tells you that there's not a problem? The Rishonim agree that on Erev Yom Tov, if the Mocher doesn't tell you that information, that means you don't have to worry, because he's obligated to tell you, and therefore if he doesn't tell you, then you don't have to worry about it. In the remainder of the year, if the Mocher doesn't tell you the information, what can you make of that? Do we say then, nothing is garnered by that because he didn't have an obligation to tell you, since he didn't have an obligation to, when the absence of that information is no indication? Or do we say that he would have told you had there really been a problem? And the other time periods, he really has to be sure to tell you about it because it's such a high likelihood. The other times, he should notify you, or you should be worried about it. I mean, he should tell you about it, but he doesn't have to tell you about it. So that happens in Machloki between the Ramban and the Rashba. The Ramban says that the remainder of the year, if he doesn't tell you, you still have to be choshesh. You have to worry about that, and you have to look into the matter. It's a safek doraita, it's a din doraita, you gotta worry about it. The Rashba, on the other hand, says that you're dealing with multiple layers of spekot over here. Safek whether there was a mother, safek whether there was an offspring, safek whether, even if there was an offspring or mother, whether it was sold. And even if they were sold, who says it was shechted now, who wasn't shechted the day before, the day afterwards? So many layers of spekot over here that we don't have to worry about it if there wasn't any notification. The Rashba says that the lack of notification, even the rest of the year, means you shouldn't worry about it. The Ramban says you have to be more circumspect. During these four periods of time when you're told this information, you have to be told the information, then it's an indication when there's an absence of that information that there's nothing wrong. The rest of the year is a suffix though, right? So you really got to pay attention and check into it. Just make sure that there's nothing wrong. Just because the Mocher didn't say anything doesn't mean that you're free and clear and you should look into that matter. So now, to your question. Lama li mitne eta aim lachatan veta bat lekala. Why does the Mishnah say that the mother was sold to the Chatan and the daughter was sold to the Kala? Why doesn't it say, as Rashi notes, et zula Chatan vet zula Kala? Why does it particularly mention the aim by the Chatan and the bat by the Kala? Milta gav orche kamashmalan. It teaches us something as an aside. The orach ara lemitrach bechatna tvemi bekaloto. That the Chatan actually does more for the Suda than the Kala. Now, there are two things that seem to come out of this. One of which is that the Chatan and Kala had separate Su'udot. That's what it seems to be happening over here. That the Bei Chatna works more towards their Su'uda than the Bei Kalata. That's one which seems to indicate they're eating separately or they're separate Su'udot for the Chatan and Kala. That's number one. Number two is that the Chatan is putting up more money. He's paying for a larger celebration than the Kala. That the Chatan is actually on the hook for a larger portion of the wedding than the Kala. Although the fact that they are separate also seems to indicate that the Chatan's party was of a greater size or of a greater celebration than the Kala's party. But just interesting notes, both from a historic standpoint as well as a halachic standpoint over here. Ba'arba prokim elu, ba'a lo mashach. The Gemara asks about our Mishnah. There was no kinyan over here. How is it that the individual purchased the basar is on the hook for it? We have a principle that, in terms of kinyanim, only a kinyan meshicha finalizes the deal. There is a machloket, we're going to have a part of it here, between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether ma'ot konot midivrei Torah. Do monies create a kinyan mina Torah? But both of them agree in the final din, without a kinyan meshicha, you can't have a kinyan. If you believe ma'ot konot mina Torah, then the din derabonan is that they impose the kinyan meshicha on top of that. If you believe ma'ot are not konot min haTorah, then mishicha is what you need min haTorah to create a kinyan over here. So in either way, you need a kinyan mishicha in order to finalize the deal. How is it over here that the person comes in and he says, I want to buy basar, and he puts his money down. All of a sudden the animal dies and he's on the hook for the animal. He never did a kinyan mishicha. Why is he on the hook for that animal? So Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Kisha Mashach. The case where he did a kinyan mishicha on it. Iochi, if that's the case, Ema Seifa. Then how do you explain the latter part of the Mishnah, which is, Abal B'Shar Yimot HaShanah, Ein Ukein. By the rest of the year, it's not true. The Fikach HaMeit, Meit LaMocher. Why is it that true that the Mocher is on the hook for it? B'ha Mashach. The Lokeach already did a Kinyan Mashiach on it. He owns it. Then he's on the hook for it. Why should the Mocher be on the hook for it? So Amar Rav Shmur Bar Rav Yitzchak, the Olam Shalom Mashach. It's got to be a case where there was no Kinyan Mashiach over here. Egon Shazika Lo Ayudei Acher. The Mocher got another party to take possession of it on behalf of the buyer over here. So now, in terms of the transaction, it's not clear here whether the buyer put money down or didn't put money down. There are Rishonim who believe that he put money down. He left money with the butcher. And then when the butcher had the animal, he was makne'it to the buyer, ayidei a third party. A kinyan, where a person is zochin shelo lefanav. You can do something for the benefit of another party, even when not there, because anansade, we are of a belief that the party or the recipient would want you to do this on their behalf, and therefore you're acting with their acquiescence, even though you don't have their acquiescence. So for instance, if someone wants to gift something to another party, and the party's not there, so now if a third party is available, and the gifter gives it to the third party on behalf of the recipient, we're going to say that the recipient definitely wants this third party to work on their behalf, because that way it locks the gift in, and the gift is theirs then. That's something to their benefit. And we say, Anan Sadeh, we know that the recipient of the gift would want to be in possession of it so that the gifter can't reverse his position, can't take it back, and it's his now. So that's Anan Sadeh. There are other Rishonim believe that it works Derech Shlichut, the Baalei Tosafot discuss this, that maybe it is that he's acting literally on your behalf. It's not just an Anan Sadeh. It's as if there's real shlichut over here. It's as if you made him into an agent for you in order to accept it on your behalf. So now, either one of those mechanisms are now available to you in this case, which is that you need basar for the holiday, whatever's coming up. So you put money down with the butcher, according to those who believe that he left money, or if you didn't put money down, you told the butcher you want to buy it. The butcher now says, he says, all right, here, third party, on behalf of the buyer, take possession of this. That way he's locked in. And you have the basar for him. Even though I don't have parties, consumers to buy the rest of it, I'm not going to this to you because I'm going to shecht it on his behalf and I want you to take possession of it on his behalf. It should be a sechut lo. It is a benefit to him. But the animal died. The animal died, it wasn't to his benefit. So then why do you say, Zochin Shalom Bifanav, that's not a zchut, that's a chovah. You can't obligate a party when they are not present. There's no reason he would want you to be his agent or act on your behalf because it's to his detriment. And therefore we don't say, Chovim Shalom Bifanav. So in this case, why is it that it works? That's what the Gemara explains over here. During these 4 periods of time of the year, it is a schut for him because he wants the basar. As the Rabbeinu Gershom describes it, that he natan lo lokech dinar, the buyer left money already there with the butcher, v'alach ledarko, and went on his way. Zika lo amocher lo lokech yedei acher shelo b'fanav, and the butcher gave it to a third party on his behalf. And the reason that he wants it so badly is because chayav liknot basar bishvil simchat yom tov. He has to purchase this meat anyway in order to accomplish or fulfill the mitzvah of simchat yom tov. Therefore, zochin adam shelo b'fanav. It's considered to be a zechut while the animal is alive, irrespective of the fact that the end game was that it died, the animal. Because as you pointed out, when he did it, he acted on behalf of the buyer in a positive way, to his benefit. Then, when it dies later, that's a after-the-fact situation, and that doesn't change the fact that when you did it on his behalf, it was a zechut for lo. But shayimot ha-shana, dechovu lo, the remainder of the year where it's only to his detriment, ein chavin l'adam shelo b'fanav. You can't obligate someone without their acquiescence, without their permission or their agency. You can't act as a proxy on their behalf without their knowledge. And that is because the remainder of the year, it is not the schut lo, as opposed to these 4 periods of time. During these 4 periods of time, the person wants the basar. He wants it so badly because it's something that is a integral part of his celebration on the day. He wants it so badly that he wants someone to act on his behalf to get the basar, because that's what he was doing. He was looking for basar, and now he finally gets it. No, if it then dies, then the buyer's on the hook for it because he wanted it so badly, he wanted the party to act on his behalf. The remainder of the year, where he wants basar, but it's not so pressing like those fair periods of time, over there he's willing to wait and say, if he gives it to me, it's good. If he can't get it, that's fine, but I'm not going to be on the hook for this cow or losing my money in that case. Question is, how much risk is he willing to take to get his basar? During these 4 periods of time, he is willing to take on a high risk because he really wants the basar. That means that he's willing to own the basar in order to ensure that he has it. That means if it dies, he's going to be on the hook for it. On the other hand, in the remainder of the year, he says, listen, if you have the basar, I'll buy it. You don't have the basar, I'm not going to buy it. And since he's not pressured to buy it, or he's not under duress, he's not willing to take the risk. And he says, when you shecht it, I'll take possession of it. If you don't shecht it, I'm not going to take possession of it. So it has to do with the situation in which you're in. The possibility exists that you could simulate these situations in different scenarios, which means that if it's right before a wedding, and you know for sure that he wants the basar, that maybe it has the same effect as being on an Erev Yom Tov. Because over there, he does want the basar no matter what. So then you can't say, if I get it, I get it. That's not true. He wants it so badly. It's possible that they're just using these as examples for those situations, even though the Mishnah only mentions those 4 periods during the year. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Barbar Prakimelu, Himidu Chachamim Divrehem Adin Torah. This is what I mentioned to you before. Rabbi Yochanan is of the belief that Ma'ot Konot Mitivrei Torah. The Min Torah, if you just give money, the transaction is over, you bought the item, and it's yours. The Chachamim instituted a Din of Mishicha in order to protect the buyer. That is, Damar Rav Yochanan, Dvar Torah Ma'ot Konot, Min HaTorah Ma'ot are sufficient means of creating a kinyan. U'ma'atam Amru Mishicha Koneh. Why do they say that Mishicha needs to be done in order for the transaction to be completed? Zera Shemi Amru Lo Nisrfu Chitecha Ba'aliyah. It was in order to protect the buyer. The problem is, if Ma'ot Konot, and they are still by the seller, then all of a sudden there's a fire in the seller's house. And he looks at your chitim and he says, I don't own them. Not my problem anymore. That's your problem. In order to prevent that attitude, the Chachamim said, until there's a kinyan mishicha, then that doesn't transfer ownership. That way that the seller keeps himself on the hook when there is something in his possession, because if he doesn't take care of it, it's not going to be sold. It's not going to be in the other party's possession. So what happens is, any other time of the year, the Chachamim have this kinyan mishicha in place for the protection of the buyer. During these 4 periods of time, they suspend that protection of the buyer because it's not for the buyer's benefit anymore. The buyer wants the basar, and he wants to know he has the basar locked in. So even without a kinyan mishicha, he's going to be gomer b'dato that he wants the ma'ot konot, and that's it. It's done. The transaction is done. The Chachamim suspended that takana of kinyan mishicha during these four periods of time. And that's the explanation for it. It's not zachin shelo adam shelo b'panav. Rather, just a suspension of the necessity for a kinyan mishicha. This obviously would not work for Reish Lakish, who thinks that a kinyan mishicha is needed mina Torah, and he'll have to explain it ayyidei zachin shelo adam shelo b'panav. Rabbi Yochanan the Shitato can explain it in this manner, that they suspended takana of kinyan mishicha during these periods of time. Alright, next Mishnah. Yom echad amur b'oto ve'beno. The fact that it says, lo tishchatu b'yom echad, that you're not allowed to shech them on the same day, that same day is hayom olech achar alayla. It is the day that follows the night. So there are two other possibilities. We'll see one of them in the Gemara, the other one I'll note for you now, which is, it could have been that yom echad meant 24 hours. That anywhere within the 24-hour period in which you shech this animal, you can't shech the other animal, which is either the mother or the child, can't be shechted within the 24-hour period. The Mishnah dispels that and says that this has to do with real days, which means that the day that follows the night. These aren't days in the sense of 24 hours. These are days in sense of Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, the days of the week. And that's what's determinant over here. So therefore, if you shecht it at night, then you have to wait until the following evening until you can shecht the other animal. On the other hand, if you shecht it right before Shkiah, on that day, right after Shkia, you could shecht the other animal. So it has to do with where during the day that you shechted it. Etzudarash Rabbi Shimon ben Zoma, Nemar mibasei breshit. By creation it says Yom Echad, Nemar boto bebeno Yom Echad. The word Yom Echad is used both by breshit, the first day, as well as by lo tishchatu b'yom echad, by the oto bebeno. Ma Yom Echad amur b'masei breshit ayom aleich achar alayla. Just like by Maaseh Bereishit, it says by Erev Vayi Boker. So the Erev, then the Boker, that's the definition of a Yom Echad. Av Yom Echad Amor Balto Ved Beno, Hayom Aleich Achar Alayla. The day goes after the night, meaning it has to do with a regular day. Tanur Banan, Et Zodorash, Rabbi Shimon Ben Zoma, the Fik, Shekol Einyan Kulo, Enu Medaber Ala B'Kodoshim. He says, why did Rabbi Shimon Ben Zoma have to come up with this drasha? What would you have thought that would have made you think otherwise? The answer to that is the placement of the Shorah Seh, Otov Ebeno, Lutishchatu B'Yom Echad, is found in Pashat Emor, Perichah Bet, in the context of all the psulim that are associated with a korban. It's the mumim in a korban. The one pasuk right before that is, Shorah Kesev Oez Kimalei, V'yashviyat Yimim Tacharimo, V'yom HaShemini V'Halah, Yeret Seh, the korban is Sheila Hashem. Then right next to it is, Shorah Seh, Otov Ebeno, Lutishchatu B'Yom Echad. Contextually, you're in the world of Kodoshim. And if you're in the world of Kodoshim, the Kodoshim, Laila Olecha Karayom. In the world of Kodoshim, it is not true that the day follows the night, it's the other way around. The night follows the day. Rashi brings proof to this from the Pasuk that speaks about the Korban Todah, which says, V'yom Korbano Yeachel, that you eat it on the day that you bring the Korban, Lo Yachniach Mimenu Ad Boker, you're not allowed to leave it until the morning. Alma, Laila Shlacharam Karayom Korbano. The day of the Korban is the day that you bring it, and the Laila Acharav. That's what you say in Ezum Mikamam. The Yom Ve'Laila, or the Shnei Yamim Ve'Laila Echad. The Laila follows the Yom, and not that the Yom follows the Laila by Kodoshim. So the fact that Otov Epino is in the context of Kodoshim, you would have thought maybe it goes Yom and Laila, not Laila Ve'Yom. So Yocholav Zekain, you might have thought this would have been the case as well. Nerakan Yom Echad, V'Nerah Maseh Breshit Yom Echad. It says Yom Echad by Otov Epino, it says Yom Echad by creation. Ma Yom Echad Amur Menaseh Breshit Hayom Aleich Achar Alayla. Av Yom Echad Amur Beotov Epino Hayom Aleich Achar Alayla. That's the necessity for this drasha. So again, it comes to dispel two things. One, which I noted in the Mishnah, is the 24 hours. It's not 24 hours. It has to do with a fixed day. And number two is, what is that day comprised of? Comprised of a night, then a day, not a day, then a night, because it's not in the world of Kodoshim. The drasha is interesting only because we spent a lot of time before discussing the fact that Otov Ebeno has application not only by Kodeshim, but also by Chulin. And Tosafot back on Daf Pei Amud Bet says that the din of Otov Ebeno is primarily by Chulin, and it only happens to be as an aside, it's connected to Kodeshim because of the Vava Chibur, Vishor Oseh. So he says primarily it is a din in Chulin. So it's interesting, the Gemara over here says, oh, it's in the world of Kodeshim, you would have thought, when the drasha of the Gemara until now seemed to indicate the otherwise, that it's really in the world of Chulin, and Kodoshim happened to be also captured by Otov Ebeno. But the truth is, contextually, the Pashtut HaPsukim is that it's found in the world of Kodoshim. It's in the Psukim of Kodoshim. Therefore, you might have thought otherwise. And that's why we need to dispel that. Rabbi Omer, Yom Echad, Idashin's Yom Echad, Yom HaMiyuchad. That the Yom Echad is not just Yom one day. Why did he use the word Echad? Echad comes from the term also Miyuchad. Right? Echad means one. But one can mean one in different ways. One can be one in terms of one and not two. It also can be one in terms of unique and particular. And that's what Rabbi is saying over here. Yom Echad means Yom HaMiyuchad. Particular days. That Yom HaMiyuchad Taon Cruz. On those particular days, you need to announce it. That in those periods of time, there's an obligation to announce it. So he's saying, on those days that are miyuchad, you have to make it known that otobe beno, that lo tishchatu, that they can't come to shchita of the aim and the offspring. Other times of the year, you don't have to do that. It's only when it's a special days do you need to make such announcements. If it's not special days, you don't need to make those announcements. What's interesting is that there is another view that's brought by the Geonim, that the Yom Echad over here is not a reference to Maaseh Breshit, but the Limud is actually has to do with Shabbat and Yom Tov. That the day and night is not about creation, but about Shabbat and Yom Tov. Just like by Shabbat and Yom Tov, the night goes before the day, so too by Lo Tishchatu B'Yom Echad also goes by the night and the day. And then the Limud over here would also be then by Rabbi very similar, which is just like by Yom Tov and Shabbat, it requires announcing. Meaning that the Ramban in Parshat Emor, when speaking about what does it mean a Mikra Kodesh, what does that mean Mikra, you call out Kodesh. That means that you gather in the Beit Knesset, and people say Hallel, and they praise Hashem, and they speak about the day, the uniqueness of the day, the Kedushat Hayom. So Mikra Kodesh means that you're announcing, you're declaring the day special. In that case, then the Limud of Rabbi makes even more sense. Because then it's Yom Echad, means that these are days where you need to be Machriz. And that just like by Shabbat and Yom Tov, you have to be Machriz, and it's just a continuation of the previous Limud. Previous Limud was, how do I know it's Yom Valayla? I know that from Shabbat and Yom Tov. And then Rabbi says, just like by Shabbat and Yom Tov, there's a din of Mikra Kodesh, so too over here, by these days, there's a specific necessity to make announcements about it, to tell the person that you sold it. The rest of the time, it's not like that. So if you have that Limud, it makes Rabbi flows much more easily from the previous Limud. Where we have the Limud, which is that it's coming from my Sefer Reshit, there's no really connection between that and what Rabbi is saying. He might be even be disagreeing with the previous statement. It's not clear here whether Rabbi argues or doesn't argue on it. But Rabbi is offering this alternative drash then, which is that Yom Echad means Yom Miyuchad, and that you shouldn't be the cause during these Miyuchad, these days that are special, of Otov Ve'Epino. And how do you prevent that is by making these announcements. Okay, with that we finish Otov Ve'Epino, Adran Alach, Otov Ve'Epino. Now we have the Kisui Adam. And the Mishnah here takes on a similar structure to what we saw at Otov Ve'Epino, and a structure we're going to see again throughout the upcoming Prokim with these mitzvot, which is Kisui Adam, Noeg Ba'aretz, Ubechutz La'aretz. Snoeg in Eretz Yisrael and outside of Eretz Yisrael, Bifnei Abayit, Shelo Bifnei Abayit. Whether the Mikdash is extant, or whether the Mikdash is not extant. Ubechulin, Avalo B'Mukdashim. So as far as the first two items that are mentioned here, they're just brought down Ragav. It's obvious that they apply in Eretz Yisrael, outside of Eretz Yisrael, Bifnei Abayit, Shelo Bifnei Abayit, because there's no correlation between it and those items. And therefore, there's no Hava Mina that'd be otherwise, but they're brought down because in other cases, it does make a difference. Now, the next reason that's given here is Kulin Avalo Mikdashim. That is a distinction. Because we saw about Otobe Beno, it applies to Kulin and Kodoshim. Over here, it only applies to Kulin and not by Kodoshim. So that is something that is uniquely associated with Kisui Adam. So we have to bring that distinction. And with that distinction, we brought down all the other distinctions that are brought in the other Prokim that are relevant to those particular mitzvot, but happen not to be relevant to Kisui Adam. Noeg b'chaya u'ba'of. It applies only to chayot and ofot because of the pasuk that says that you have to ish minei sel mina gerak arbetucham asher yetzud seid chaya o'of asher ye'achel v'shafach et amo v'kisau be'afar. So there you see that chaya and of are the ones that need it. Behema does not have a requirement of kisui adam. Be'mizuman v'she'enu mizuman. It's whether you're bringing it up in a controlled environment, or whether you just happen to come across it somewhere else. It's in the wild, and you have to come across this chaya in the wild. Now, Rashi claims that this was also brought down agav shiluach hakein, because by shiluach hakein it says ki karei kan sibor. And there, it's only applicable when it happens by chance. If it's domesticated or brought up in a controlled environment, there's no din of shiluach hakein. Because of that, it brought it down here as well. Tosafot does not agree, and Tosafot says you needed to mention it over here as well, because of the way the pasuk lays out. The pasuk says, ish ish mibnei yisrael min hagar garbet ucham, asher yatzu tzeid chayav oof. The pasuk sounds like you're out hunting, and you happen to get this animal. Again, there, it sounds like it might only apply to things when you're out in the field. Maybe it doesn't apply to mizuman. Therefore, the Mishnah had to dispel that thought, and write bit mizuman, vishabe'enu mizuman. Again, we'll learn this later on in the perek. But he said that it was reason that they brought here is necessity to kisui adam, not just agav shiluach hakein. Minoheg bekoi mipnei shu safek. It has application to a koi because a koi is a safek behemah safek chaya. We just spent a bunch of time on this in the previous parak. All the different positions with regards to what a koi is, whether it's a birya mipnei atzma, whether it's a safek chaya, safek behemah, or whether it was a mixed breed between a behemah and a chaya. All those explanations that result in it being a safek chaya, safek behema, then you have to do kisui adam misafek, because it is a dindoraita, and if it is a chaya, then you'd have to cover it misafek, a safek doraita luchumra. Vein shochin neoto b'yom tov. You're not allowed to shecht the koi on yom tov, v'im shachato in mechasim et domo. And if you do shecht, then we don't let you cover over its dam on yom tov. Now the reason you can't shecht it on yom tov is, Rashi claims over here, because we don't allow you to be mechalo yom tov, for kisui adam. The truth is, you're not allowed to be mechalel yom tov for anything, because their only ochel nefesh is permitted. This is not considered to be ochel nefesh, and therefore you wouldn't be able to do a din d'oraita or a violation of malacha d'oraita in order to do kisui adam. So it's clearly not really about chilul yom tov at a d'oraita tor level, it's about chilul yom tov on a d'rabbonan level, which is that if you have items that are afarti cholach, which means that you have loose dirt that is there, is it considered mukhan? Is it considered to be made ready to be used by this person for kisui adam? So if it is a vadai chayav oof, we consider it to be mukhan, it's not muksa, and therefore you can use it on yom tov to cover the dam. On the other hand, if you have a safek, it's not considered to be mukhan, it's a safek. The Gemara in Beitza turns it as that. It's mukhan levadai, it's enu mukhan le safek. Consider something to be ois muksa, meaning that there's no din of muksa on it because that would have been your intent, or we assume you would have thought to use it for that purpose. That's true when it's something that's a vadai, something that's an absolute obligation. Something that's a safek, people don't have that in mind, or people don't intend it for that. The Gemara there says, even if the person says before Yom Tov, I intend to use this for a koi that I'm going to shecht on Yom Tov, it doesn't help. That's a zera, that if we allow you to cover the dam of the koi on Yom Tov, people are going to come to think that it's a real chayo. If it's a real chayo, then they're going to eat the chelim of the animal, and that's a mistake because we're not sure about it. So we don't want people covering it on Yom Tov and giving the impression that that's the case. On a weekday, people say they're just doing it misafek. On Yom Tov, where you have to violate muksa, you have to violate other principles, there they'd only do it if it was a vadai. So if we allow people to do it when they prepared it in mind to have it for the koi, people are going to get the mistaken impression that it's okay to eat a koi's chelim. And for that reason, we don't allow it at all on Yom Tov. Now, the Gemara says, muktashim, my time alone. Why is it that kisui adam only applies to chulin and not to muktashim? Shenemar, as the pasuk says, v'shafach et damo v'chisau be'afar. The blood that is spilled from the chaya and the oaf, you have to kisau be'afar. You have to cover it over with the afar. Afar lo ne'amar. It doesn't say kisau afar, covered over with earth, with dirt. Ela be'afar. It says, in the dirt. Be'afar means sandwiched in. Inside of the earth or the dirt that's there. That means that you need both earth on the bottom and earth on top of it. Over here it's impossible by kodoshim, which the Gemara is going to go on to explain. There's a machloket here between Rashi and Tosafot as to what the obligation is as far as afar tichuach lamalo and afar tichuach lamata. You're not allowed to shecht on hard earth and just say, oh, there's earth underneath it. It has to be what's called afar tichuach. It has to be broken up earth. It has to be softened earth that you use here, both underneath it and on top of it. Tosafot over here makes a distinction between the earth below and the earth on top. He says, as far as the earth on top is concerned, you have to physically bring it there. you have to do the kisui adam actively. And that means that if the wind blows dirt over it, so that then the kisui adam is done, but that means if it got exposed again, you'd have to come back and recover it. Because the wind blowing it over wasn't you doing it actively. On the other hand, the Bible doesn't say the earth that's underneath can happen passively. You don't need to prepare it. You don't need to do anything. If it's there and you have to shecht on it, totally fine. And if it gets moved away or uncovered, it's not your issue. So Tosfot differentiates between the afar and the underneath, which can be there passively. There's no need for active engagement. Versus the earth on top or the dirt on top, which has to be done actively by you, and you're responsible for it to be there and to ensure that it stays covered. Now, if you did it already, the mitzvah's done. But if the wind blew it over and took away the mitzvah, then when the wind uncovers it again, your mitzvah's still there and you need to cover it, you need to actively engage. So that's Tosafot's view. Tosafot then has a problem with the Gemara that we saw earlier, where there was someone shooting an arrow, and he killed the bird in the air. And the Gemara asked over there, well, how did he shecht the bird in the air? Doesn't he have to do kisui adam? The Gemara says that he prepared a field for kisui adam. Rashi over there says he prepared the field by hoeing up the whole field. He made the whole field into afar tzicholach, and therefore he had in mind that that would be the bottom for the kisui adam. Tosafot says that's the wrong way to read it. It doesn't mean that he actually prepared it physically. All it means is that he had in mind that that would be the afar tzicholach for his shechita. Now, not that he actively did anything. That difference speaks to this issue. Rashi thinks that you have to actively prepare the earth underneath and the earth on top. And that's why over there he says prepare means to physically prepare it. He literally moved the earth around and made it into afar tzicholach. Tosafot says that the preparation was simply that he said, this is where I'm going to shecht that this is going to be used for my kisui adam, not that he did anything physically. So again, that leads to this difference where Rashi thinks you have to be active even on the earth underneath, not just on top. Tosafot says below, the earth below can is just a function of it being there. You can do it passively. You need to actively put it on top. So the sandwich is created. It's internal to the earth, but you don't have to create the bottom. The bottom can be there already. You just have to create the top over it. So now the Gemara says, lo efshar, it's not possible. Hey, Chaliavit, what do you want him to do? Later, if you're going to bring earth to the Mikdash, fill the Vatle, and then you'll make it batel to that area. Kamosif al-binyan. You're adding on to the building. Uchtiv. And the Pasuk says in Divrei Yamim, with regards to the blueprints of the Mikdash that is given to David HaMelech that's passed to Shlomo, Hakol b'chtav miyad Hashem alai hiskil. That everything came from Hashem, and I was given the information, the blueprints were given to me by the Navi, and everything comes from Hashem, which means that you're not allowed to change anything in the dimensions or the way the Mikdash stands. So now if you're going to bring an earth here and be mevatel it, you're changing a dimension or you're changing a part of the Mikdash. Now what's especially important over here is that it has to be done on the Mizbeach. And that is because in the Mikdash, the only thing that needs kisui adam are ofot. Behemot don't require kisui adam. Chayot aren't in the Mikdash. So the only animals in the Mikdash that require kisui adam are the birds that are brought on the Mizbeach. That's a chatat of and an olat of. And both the chatat of and the olat of are shechted right by the Mizbeach. The olat of is done on the Mizbeach itself. The chatat of is done on the base right below. So the olat of, you're going to be on the Mizbeach. How are you going to do kisui adam? You have to bring dirt, put it on the Mizbeach, and then mevatel it to the Mizbeach. Now you've changed the dimensions or the way that the Mizbeach looks. Tosafot does ask over here, how come the Bnei Gola, when they came in the time of the second bite, expanded the size of the Mizbeach when we have this pasuk that the blueprints of the Mikdash are fixed in place? So if they could expand the Mizbeach, why can't we also over here do something to change the Mizbeach? So Tosafot says, first of all, they darshan, they pasuk. And they had a specific pasuk that indicated to them that they had the ability to expand it. Then the Rabbeinu Tam makes a suggestion that the problem over here is not a problem of the dimensions of the Mizbeach, but the problem that the Mizbeach needs to be square. And that there's an obligation in the Torah that Ravuah, yeah, that it be absolutely squared out. And when you put on the dirt on top of it, you're going to ruin the squaring out of the Mizbeach. The Baal Yad Tosafot reject that for two reasons. One of which is you could put dirt all the way around and square it out. So then you could solve your problem by squaring it out. And number two is the pasuk that the Gemara is quoting is not the pasuk or the source for the fact that the Mizbeach needs to be square. It's, according to the pasuk, it has to do with the dimensions of the Mikdash and that which is found in the Mikdash. Those are the blueprints. And it should have quoted the pasuk about Ravuah rather than the pasuk about the blueprints of the Mikdash if that was the issue. Rabbeinu Tam could answer that sometimes the Gemara just brings the most obvious or easy pasuk, even though it's not exactly the pasuk that we learn it from. It's just telling you that everything in the Mikdash has particular instructions about it. Happens to be that here we're mentioning the blueprints, but it's also true of the squareness of the Mizbeach. But this is just a generic way to say it, even though it's not the direct source for it. Somebody says, Lo Levadle, if you're not Levadle, Kavavi Chatzitza, then it is a Chatzitza. Now, both for the Chatatov and the Olatov, the dirt that you need to put there is underneath the blood that is going to be sprinkled onto the wall of the Mizbeach. So they have to put it on the wall of the Mizbeach prior to you sprinkling it on the wall. If you're Mevatel it, now you've exchanged the dimensions of the Mizbeach. If you're not Mevatel it, then you have a Chatzitza between you, the Dam, and getting to the wall, the Kira Mizbeach, where it needs to go. So Nihi, Dilemata, Lo Efshar, Lamala Efshar. Okay, so say it's not possible to put earth underneath the blood, but then it is possible to put earth on top of it afterwards. Le'aved Kisui. Why don't you just do a Kisui Adam? You can't do what's below, but do the part that you can do, which is to cover it on top afterwards. Milo Tanya. Don't we have a bright, Rabbi Yonatan Yosef Omer, Shechat Chaya, V'achakach Shechat Behema. If you shechted a Chaya, which is Chayam in Kisui Adam, and then afterwards you shechted a Behema, Patur Melachasot. There you don't have to do Kisui Adam, because the blood of the Behema is now on top. The blood of the Behema on top is already either providing a cover to the blood of the Chaya, or preventing you from covering it, and therefore you don't have to do anything. Behema, v'achaka chaya. On the other hand, if you did a behema on the bottom, and then a chaya on top, chaya v'chasot. Then you do have to do kisui adam. So even though there's blood of behema underneath it, it's not sitting on a afar tikhlof. It's not covered underneath by a fire. There's something else underneath it. Nevertheless, you're still obligated to cover the blood of the chaya that is on top. If that's the case, then why not over here say the same thing? Just like by the blood of the chaya that's on top of the blood of the behema, that you still have to cover, even though the blood of the behema is not earth underneath it, you still have to do what's on top. Say the same thing here. So even though the blood's on the wall of his back and there's no dirt underneath it, you still have to cover it on top. Why not say that in this situation? My answer is, Kiddi Rabbi Zeira. That is based on the principle of Rabbi Zeira. Dama Rabbi Zeira, Kora Oy Labila, Ain Bila Makevitbo. Anything that can be mixed together, then mixing is not ma'akev its ability to be put on the mizbeach. Kosheinu roi lebila, if it's impossible to mix it, bila ma'akevet bo, then mixing it is ma'akev. This is a reference to the menachot, and with regards to the mincha, it says that the maximum mincha that you can bring is made of 60 isaron. That is the largest mincha. If you bring a mincha that's greater than 60 isaron, you have to bring it in 2 kelim, you can't bring it in 1 kli. Gemara wants to know, what's the issue? We know that bila is not ma'akev. Mixing of the oil and the flour in the mincha is not ma'akev the mincha. It's not ma'akev the mincha. Why does it matter that you have 60, 61, 62 isaron mixed with the log shemen? Why does that matter? It should be irrelevant. It's not ma'akev. So that's where Rabbi Zeira's principle comes up, and he says, if you have the possibility of mixing it, then the mixing isn't ma'akev. Does not stop your ability from doing this mitzvah. On the other hand, if it's too large to mix it, where it's impossible to mix it, then the bila is me'akev. Now Tosfot speaks about it over here, he also spoke about it in Menachot as well, is where do you know this from? How do you know this from? The Torah says blula over and over again. It says it tens of times in the Torah. It says the word blula b'shemen, blula b'shemen. And we know when in Kodoshim, when you repeat something twice, it's me'akev. So first of all, how do you know that bila is not me'akev? Number two is, once you know that bila is not ma'akev, how do you know that you actually have to do the bila or have the possibility of doing the bila? Or in essence, what's the source where Rabbi Zeira says? So tell us what over here says about bila. The reason that it's not ma'akev is because shema yeshum drash kedarshina minei de bila lo ma'akva. Maybe there's a drush that we have somewhere that tells us that bila is not ma'akev. Shema kulu tzriche. Or maybe we need all of those bila to teach us something they're not available to teach you about mixing. So Tosfot says, I don't really have a source for why bila is not ma'akevet, because in all these situations, either maybe there's another drasha, or maybe there's some drasha that tells us bila is not ma'akevet. Tosfot in Menachot gives a different reason, which is that the word bila in the Torah is never given as an active verb. It doesn't say about ubalal, you have to mix the shemen and the ktoret, it just tells you blula ba shemen, the resultant item is mixed in shemen. And for there, Tosafot Ibn Achot says that it's not me'akev because there's no active tzivui to do it. It has to be like that, but it doesn't have to be that you actively do it. And that's the reason it's not me'akev. But then why is it a mitzvah? So Tosafot Ibn Achot just says it has to be a mitzvah because then otherwise why does it say b'lulav ha'shemen? Otherwise it's meaningless that it tells you b'lulav ha'shemen. It must mean something that it's b'lulav ha'shemen. Over here he says, v'afakav debila lomakva mekom kom svoruhu. It makes logical sense to call pachot to ra'oi b'inan. That has to be at least ra'oi. Kaven she's kira katuv bila. The fact that the Torah mentions it already means that the Torah must want this. There must be something the Torah wants about this. V'chein le'inyon kisui da'ocham. The same thing is true by here, by kisui adam. The kisui adam is not me'akev. But the Torah mentions kisui adam. So if it mentions kisui adam, it obviously wants kisui adam. So how do I balance between the fact that it's not ma'akev the mitzvah, but the Torah wants it? So what it must be is that in potential, it must have the possibility of that being done. If that potential exists, then it's not ma'akev if it's not done. But if the potential doesn't exist, then it seems like you're doing the mitzvah without a part of the mitzvah that needs to be done or should have been done with the mitzvah. Even though it's not ma'akev the mitzvah, it's a part of the details of the mitzvah which Hashem wanted. And if you can't provide one of those details, then it's going to be ma'akev the fact that you're doing the mitzvah. Now, if you do the mitzvah, you have to leave this out. It won't be ma'akev, but you at least have to have that potential. And Tosfot brings this up in numerous situations. He says, Be'chalitza, mikra bikurim. Mikra bikurim is not ma'akev to bikurim. But if you can't do mikra bikurim, it is ma'akev. And he says for the same reason. The fact that the Torah told you you need mikra bikurim tells you that's an important part of the mitzvah. The fact that it's not ma'akev, that's a separate issue, but there is a mitzvah to do it. And that mitzvah should compel you to have to make it at least ra'oi likriya. And therefore, as someone who can't speak, someone who, because of whatever reason, can't do mikra bikurim, shouldn't bring up their bikurim to the Yerushalayim. Same with kriyat chalitza, the reading of the parashiyah of chalitza, even though it's not ma'akev. Nevertheless, you have to have the potential to do it. If you can't speak, then you can't do it, and therefore it's a problem. The sparo b'chol kani. So that there is some drush in all these cases that they're not ma'akev. Because there is a mitzvah in a Torah to do it. Tosfot then leaves smicha on korbanot as to be something that's very difficult. Because sometimes the Gemara says smicha is ma'akev. Sometimes the Gemara says that smicha is not ma'akev. And he says you have to figure out why in some cases the Gemara says smicha is a problem for the korban. Why sometimes without smicha, we don't worry about it. For instance, a person who's tamei can send in his korbanot, even though he can't do smicha. Someone who's overseas who can't do smicha can send in his korbanot. But other times we say smicha's ma'akev and you can't bring the korban. He says, but tzarech nitein tam lomo. You have to give a reason as to why. Tosfot in other places does note differences or svara to explain why the smicha is different in these different locations. But Tosfot's just talking about this general idea that why you need something that's ra'oi when the Torah gives you a command, even though it's not me'akev. Because it has to be that it has some impact on the mitzvah. And the mitzvah, the impact is that it is me'akev of it, you can't do it at all. But if you don't do it, it's not me'akev. And similarly over here, by the case of kisui adam, it is something that's not me'akev. But if you don't have the ability to do it at all, then it is me'akev. By the case of the blood of the behemah being below the blood of the chaya, it just happens to be in that scenario, there's no afar below it. But you could have had afar below it. The fact that you could have had afar below it is enough to make it that you're chayav to put afar on top. By the Mikdash, the reason you can't have afar below it is because it's impossible to have afar below it. It's impossible to have it. That is going to be ma'akev, the mitzvah. And that's why, by Mukdashim, there's no din of kisui adam. Mar says, the ligrare v'lichse. Why don't you scrape it off the wall of the Mizbeach and then do kisui adam? Milot's none. Don't we have a Mishnah coming that says, Damanitas, when you're shechting, they used to shecht in pits, so that the blood would stay local within the pits. What happens if it sprays all over the place? Vashala sakin, and the blood that's on the knife. Chayav lachasot. You have to cover that dam. You have to do kisui dam of the dam on the knife. And nobody thinks you're gonna bury the knife. It means that you're gonna scrape the blood off the knife, and then you're going to put it to kisui dam. So alma de goriru mixele. You have to scrape it off, and then you have to cover it. Hachanami nigro mixele. Let's do the same thing over here. Scrape it off the wall of Mizbeach, and then cover it. Where it says, I kodshei Mizbeach, if we were speaking about kodshei Mizbeach, hachanami, that would make sense. And that's what Tosafot said earlier, when we said in the Mukdashim in the Mishnah, it means also kodshei Mizbeach. Now, when it means kodshei Mizbeach, don't you have a problem over here because there is no shechita. You didn't do shechita on these birds. The only thing that is done in the Mikdash that requires kisui adam are the olat ha'of and the chatat ha'of. Both olat ha'of and the chatat ha'of require melika and not shechita. So first of all, there's no problem with that because the pasuk never says the word shechita. It says v'shafach et damo. Unlike Oto Be'epino, where it says lo tishchatu b'yom echad, there shechita is mentioned explicitly. Over here by kisui adam, there's no need for shechita. It just has to be v'shafach. And therefore, even Malika will be sufficient. In addition, you could also bring in the principle that the Gemara has with regards to the Sayir Mishtaleach. That the Sayir Mishtaleach, the way that you make it do its mitzvah, is to push it off the mountain. And therefore, pushing it off the mountain is deemed like its shechita. Similar to what we mentioned yesterday with regards to Egla Rufa. There's some that believe that the Arifa of the Egla Rufa functions like shechita, because that's the thing that you need to do to it. Similarly over here, the Malika is the facilitator by the Ofot and the Mikdash, and therefore the Malika will be deemed like Shechita. That's another way you can answer it. That means that even according to Rabbi Shimon, it will be classified here as Shechita, because of the fact that it also is Ro'oi La'achila. Chatat Ha'of is then, through Malika, be able to be eaten by the Kohanim, and by the Olat Ha'of, it's allowed to be put on the Mizbeach, Achilat Mizbeach. So you see that it is a facilitator of Achila, which means that it's functioning like shechita, and therefore you could deem the malika to be shechita, and for that reason, it does have impact over here. Whether you say it's because there's no need for shechita, or it's considered a deemed shechita, there will be a need for kisui adam for those things that are kodshe mizbeach. Gemara says, okay, by kodshe mizbeach, you can scrape it off the wall, and you can do kisui adam. Aval, hocha mayeskinan, bekodshe berek habayit. We're not speaking about kodshe mizbeach, we're speaking about things that are kodosh, bekedushat berek habayit. Means that they're not to be put on the Mizbeach. They were sanctified for their monetary value to be given to Kodesh. Now Kodesh owns these animals. They belong to Hekdesh. And now you go ahead and you shecht it. But when you shecht it, it's going to be a surbana. Where it says, v'lifrakinu, v'lifsinu. Why don't you redeem it? And then do kisui adam. Where it says, bina namado v'aracha. The only way you're allowed to redeem something if it stood up and can be assessed by the Kohanim. Because the pasuk says by the redeeming of Hekdesh, HaKohen, you have to stand it up and have it assessed. When it's dead, it can't be stood up and assessed. When you shech something that's Kodesh Berek HaBayit, it's not yours. It belongs to Hekdesh. Now that it's dead, you can't do anything with it. You can't eat it. Because by Kodesh Berek HaBayit, before you shech that, there's no chiyuv of kisui adam. If you already redeemed them, which is the purpose of Kodesh Berek HaBayit, is monetary value that belongs to Hekdesh, and you're supposed to monetize the item, then the animal's already chulin after it's redeemed, and of course you're chayav in kisui adam, because it's no longer Hekdesh. So the only scenario by kodshei berek habayit is the case where you shech the kodshei berek habayit. Well, shechting the kodshei berek habayit, you have something now that is not ra'ui the achila, because of the fact that you shech the kodshei berek habayit, which I have nothing to do with. It still belongs to Hekdesh. And I can monetize it afterwards if there's a possibility of redeeming it. But we know that redeeming it requires hamado barocha. It requires you to assess it in a manner where it's standing and can't be assessed, and that's not possible anymore. So therefore, you have to be buried. The kodesh berek habayit, they're worthless now. They're worthless. That also means that it's a shechita she'eni ruya. It's a shechita she'eni ruya that's not subject to kisui adam. And that's the problem here, and that's why the Tana didn't mention kodoshim, or says kodoshim are not relevant in the world of kisui adam. So Gemara says, ukeman. So who are you saying this according to? Ike Rabbi Meir, if you say this according to Rabbi Meir, Damara kol hayu bichlal amadav aracha, that everything is included in amadav aracha, means that both kodesh mizbeach and kodesh berek habayit require amadav aracha, and if you require amadav aracha, you can't do it. Hamar shechita sheni ruya, shma shechita. He's the one who says that if you do a shechita, that's not a good shechita, it's still considered to be a shechita. So over here, when you shecht the berek habayit, even though you don't result in something that can be eaten, it's asur ba'ana, nevertheless, you did a shechita. Shechita requires kisui adam. Ike Rabbi Shimon, if you hold like Rabbi Shimon, demar shechita she'eni ruya, lo shma shechita, he says that a shechita that is not ruya is not called shechita. Amar lo ya bichlal amada baracha. He's the one who holds that kodesh berek habayit are not subject to amada baracha. So you have a problem here. Rabbi Meir requires hamada baracha, doesn't require shechita ruya. So therefore, the shechita should obligate you in kisui adam, irrespective of the fact that this shechita doesn't result in something you can eat. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon, who says that you don't need Hamadar Racha B'Kodshei Berek Abayit, he says that a Shechita Sheni Ruya is not a good Shechita. But since you don't need Hamadar Racha, you can redeem it afterwards, and retroactively it makes it into a Shechita that was Ruya, because now you can eat it. Now Tosfot points out, or expands on what I just said, that retroactively it becomes Ruya Achila. He says, first of all, you're going to have to redeem it at this point, because otherwise it's going to be a huge loss to Hekdesh. So therefore, maybe that's why, since you will, by definition, redeem it, retroactively, we look at it as if at the time you did the Shechita, then you should be a Shechita Ruya, and you should have to cover the Dam. Or he invokes the other principle that we know that Rabbi Shimon subscribes to, that we saw in yesterday's Daf, which is, anything that will be redeemed in the future, we look at it as if it is redeemed. So at the moment of Shechita, when it now becomes available, or is necessitated, Pidyon over here, we look at it as kol amed liftot kipadui dami, and it's as if the pidyon is already done, and that's why you're chayav in the kisui dam at that moment. So according to both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon, you should be chayav in kisui adam with regards to kodshei bedek habayit. Tosfot does point out that later on, we have a principle that as long as the animal is still mifarkes, is still flopping around, it has a din of a mother varocha. If that's the case, then even according to Rabbi Meir, Lushita to, you could come up with a case, but you shefted it for bedek habayit, and then it's mifarkes afterwards, and you did that mada berachah during that period of time, and then you could be obligated in kisui adam, even according to Rabbi Meir. So Tosfot brings a principle that is noted over here by Rabbi Shemayo, that if you do a proper and full shechita, the animal is considered to be mate, period, even if it's mifarkes afterwards. Where you have a din that mifarkes is still alive, is where the shechita does not matir it be'achila. So by a kosher animal, where you're doing shechita, over here, where you're doing malika on the birds, and that's going to be machshinem le'achila, then pirkus afterwards is not meaningful at all, because it's muta le'achila, as soon as you finish whatever was prescribed by the Torah. On the other hand, by non-kosher animals, or for a goy, if he does shechita, shechita there is not effective at creating a complete death of the animal. It's not deemed to be dead until it's literally dead. And therefore, the pirkus in between, the animal is still considered to be alive. And in those instances, you can do amada varocha while the animal is still flopping around. But in cases where the shechita is the matter and is matter b'achila, the pirkus afterwards is not considered because you have a deemed death at the moment that the shechita is complete. And therefore, as soon as it's roi l'achila, amada varocha is out of the picture. And even if it's mifarkes, you can't do amada varocha. So I'm Rav Yosef, Rabbi Hi. Our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi, Nosim La Liba de Tanaim, and he brought together different opinions of Tanaim and combined them. The Shechita Sheinu Ruya, Savalak Rabbi Shimon. He holds like Rabbi Shimon that if it's a Shechita Sheinu Ruya, it's not a Shechita that requires Kisui Adam. Bamadava Raka, Savalak Rabbi Meir. On the other hand, by redemption of Kodoshim, he holds like Rabbi Meir that even Kodshei Bedek Habayit require Hamadava Raka. So now, if you can't do Hamadava Raka, you can't redeem the animal. You can't redeem the animal. The shechita is a shechita sheni ruya because you can't eat it, and therefore it's not going to be subject to kisui adam. And that's why you can't have kisui adam by kodoshim, because by kodshei bedek habayit, there's no way you can do kisui adam. You can't do a madar racha after you already killed the kayaut and ofot. If you can't do a madar racha, that means the shechita that you did not facilitate your ability to eat it. You can't eat it, then it's a shechita sheni ruya. Shechita sheni ruya is not subject to kisui adam, according to Rabbi Shimon. So the combination of those two opinions, picking from one part for Rabbi Shimon, one part for Rabbi Meir, that's what gets you this opinion of Rabbi over here, that kodeshim are not subject to kisui adam. Vibai deima, kula Rabbi Shimon. Some say it's all according to Rabbi Shimon. It means that shechita sheni ruya is not shma shechita, but over here you can do a madav racha after the fact, so you can make it into a shechita ruya. Shani ocha damakra v'shafach v'kisa. The pasuk says that blood is spilled, it must be covered immediately. That's only, if the only thing you need to do is shecht it, and then cover it. Over here, there's an interim stage, which is you have to shecht it, redeem it, and then do kisui adam. That's not what the Torah requires. You shecht it, and then you immediately do kisui without any action that needs to interrupt it. And even though Rabbi Shimon says, it still means that there is a pidyon that is required over here, even though it is a deemed pidyon, But a din pidyon is a problem, because that's the only thing that facilitates your ability to make you chayav in the kisui adam. And that's not what the Torah prescribed. The Torah prescribed the shafach v'chisa. Or the fact that it has to be ra'oi l'pidyon at some point, that's what allows you to say, kol omer liftot kipadui dami. That's the equivalent of saying that there's some interim stage there that is required. And if that's the case, it doesn't fulfill the necessity of the Torah to be b'shafach v'chisa. Where it says, okay, once you have that answer, afilu teim ha-kod shem izbeach. That's the same problem you have by kod shem izbeach. Mishenim b'chusar el ha-shpicha v'kisui. You have the shpicha and kisui. Yatzazeh, shem b'chusar shpicha, greira v'kisui. Over here, you're missing shpicha, the shechting, or the malika of the birds. The greira, you have to scrape the blood off the wall of the mizbeach, and then do the kisui adam. So again, there's an interim action that separates between the shpicha and the kisui. Therefore, it's precluded from the world of kisui adam. And there, both kochem and kabayit, according to both answers, and kochem izbeach, even according to the second answer, are not relevant in the world of kisui adam. And that's why the Mishnah says that kisui adam only applies to chulin and not to muktashim. And then even though by a knife and by the dam that sprinkles around, you have to do greira to actually do the kisui adam, over there, the kisui adam, or the greira, is the way to facilitate your ability to get that dam into kisui adam. But had the blood not sprinkled away all over the place, you could have done the kisui adam without the greira. So over there, the greira is not an absolute necessity, and that's why it's not a problem, or it's still required in order to do the kisui adam. Over here, there's no way to do the kisui adam without greira, because by definition, it's going onto the wall of mizbeach. And therefore, the only way to do kisui adam is greira. In that case, it's me'akev the kisui adam, or in essence, makes it that you can't do kisui adam, or it's not relevant kisui adam over here. In cases where you have to do greira in order to get the dam, but it's not an absolute necessity that it ends up in that situation where you need greira, over there, you have to do the greira and do the kisui adam, because it's not something that is an absolute necessity. It happens to be the circumstances created the necessity in that case. Okay, we're going to stop here. 15 lines down on the top of Pei Dalet Amud Aleph.